You slang the Supreme Court within an inch of its life. Then you turn around and talk like the NAACP.
Good Lord. I didn't get mad with the court because of the Negroes. Negroes slapped the brief on the bench, all right. But that wasn't what made me furious. I was raving at what they were doing to the 10th Amendment and all the fuzzy thinking. The Negroes were incidental to the issue in this war.
To your own private war. You carry a card these days?
Why didn't you hit me instead? For God's sake, Atticus.
Her father sighed. The lines around his mouth deepened. His hands with their swollen joints fumbled with his yellow pencil. Jean Louise, he said, let me tell you something right now, as plainly as I can put it. I am old-fashioned, but this I believe with all my heart. I'm a sort of Jeffersonian Democrat. Do you know what that is?
Huh? I thought you voted for Eisenhower. I thought Jefferson was one of the great souls of the Democratic Party or something.
Go back to school, her father said. All the Democratic Party has to do with Jefferson these days is put his picture up at banquets. Jefferson believed full citizenship was a privilege to be earned by each man, that it was not something given lightly, nor to be taken lightly. A man couldn't vote simply because he was a man, in Jefferson's eyes. He had to be a responsible man. A vote was, to Jefferson, a precious privilege a man attained for himself in a live-and-let-live economy.
Atticus, you are rewriting history.
No, I'm not. It might benefit you to go back and have a look at what some of your founding fathers really believed, instead of relying so much on what people these days tell you they believed.
You might be a Jeffersonian, but you're no Democrat.
Neither was Jefferson.
Then what are you? A snob or something?
Yes. I'll accept being called a snob when it comes to government. I'd like very much to be left alone to manage my own affairs in a live-and-let-live economy. I'd like for my state to be left alone, to keep house without advice from the NAACP, which knows next to nothing about its business and cares less. That organization has stirred up more trouble in the past 5 years.
Atticus, the NAACP hasn't done half of what I've seen in the past 2 days. It's us.
Us?
Yes, sir. Us. You. Has anybody in all the wrangling and high words over states' rights and what kind of government we should have thought about helping the Negroes? We missed the boat, Atticus. We sat back and let the NAACP come in because we were so furious at what we knew the court was going to do, so furious at what it did, we naturally started shouting, "Nigger!" Took it out on them because we resented the government. When it came, we didn't give an inch. We just ran instead, when we should have tried to help them live with the decision. It was like Bonaparte's retreat we ran so fast. I guess it's the first time in our history that we ever ran, and when we ran, we lost. Where could they go? Who could they turn to? I think we deserve everything we've gotten from the NAACP. And more.
I don't think you mean what you're saying.
I mean every word of it.
Then let's put this on a practical basis right now. Do you want Negroes, by the carload, in our schools and churches and theaters? Do you want them in our world?
They're people, aren't they? We were quite willing to import them when they made money for us.
Do you want your children going to a school that's been dragged down to accommodate Negro children?
The scholastic level of that school down the street, Atticus, couldn't be any lower, and you know it. They're entitled to the same opportunities anyone else has. They're entitled to the same chance.
Her father cleared his throat. Listen, Scout, you're upset by having seen me do something you think is wrong. But I'm trying to make you understand my position. Desperately trying. This is merely for your own information, that's all. So far in my experience, white is white, and black's black. So far, I've not yet heard an argument that has convinced me otherwise. I'm 72 years old, but I'm still open to suggestion. Now think about this. What would happen if all the Negroes in the South were suddenly given full civil rights? I'll tell you. There'd be another Reconstruction. Would you want your state governments run by people who don't know how to run them? Do you want this town run by... Now, wait a minute. Willoughby's a crook. We know that. But do you know of any Negro who knows as much as Willoughby? Zeebo'd probably be the mayor of Macon. Would you want someone of Zeebo's capability to handle the town's money? We're outnumbered, you know. Honey, you do not seem to understand that the Negroes down here are still in their childhood as a people. You should know it. You've seen it all your life. They've made terrific progress in adapting themselves to white ways, but they're far from it yet. They were coming along fine, traveling at a rate they could absorb, more of them voting than ever before. Then the NAACP stepped in with its fantastic demands and shoddy ideas of government. Can you blame the South for resenting being told what to do about its own people by people who have no idea of its daily problems? The NAACP doesn't care whether a Negro man owns or rents his land, how well he can farm, or whether or not he tries to learn a trade and stand on his own 2 feet. Oh, no. All the NAACP cares about is that man's vote. So can you blame the South for wanting to resist an invasion by people who are apparently so ashamed of their race they want to get rid of it? How can you have grown up here, led the kind of life you've led, and can only see someone stomping on the 10th Amendment? Jean Louise, they're trying to wreck us. Where have you been? Right here in Macon. What do you mean? I mean, I grew up right here in your house, and I never knew what was in your mind. I only heard what you said. You neglected to tell me that we were naturally better than the Negroes, bless their kinky heads, that they were able to go so far, but so far only. You neglected to tell me what Mr. O'Hanlon told me yesterday. That was you talking down there. But you let Mr. O'Hanlon say it. You're a coward, as well as a snob, and a tyrant, Atticus. When you talked of justice, you forgot to say that justice is something that has nothing to do with people. I heard you on the subject of Zeebo's boy this morning. Nothing to do with our Calpurnia. And what she's meant to us. How faithful she's been to us. You saw nigger. You saw NAACP. You balanced the equities, didn't you? I remember that rape case you defended. But I missed the point. You love justice, all right. Abstract justice written down, item by item, on a brief. Nothing to do with that black boy. You just like a neat brief. His cause interfered with your orderly mind, and you had to work order out of disorder. It's a compulsion with you, and now it's coming home to you. She was on her feet, holding the back of the chair. Atticus, I'm throwing it at you, and I'm going to grind it in. You better go warn your younger friends that if they want to preserve our way of life, it begins at home. It doesn't begin with the schools or the churches or any place, but home. Tell them that, and use your blonde, immoral, misguided, nigger-loving daughter as your example. Go in front of me with a bell and say, unclean. Point me out as your mistake. Point me out. Jean Louise Finch, who was exposed to all kinds of guff from the white trash she went to school with, that she might never have gone to school for all the influence it had on her. Everything that was gospel to her, she got at home. From her father? You sowed the seeds in me, Atticus. And now it's coming home to you.
Are you finished with what you have to say?
She sneered. Not half through. I'll never forgive you for what you did to me. You cheated me. You've driven me out of my home. And now I'm in a no man's land, but good. There's no place for me anymore in Macon. And I'll never be entirely at home anywhere else.
Her voice cracked.
Why, in the name of God, didn't you marry again? Marry some nice, dim-witted southern lady who would have raised me right.
turn me into a simpering, mealy-mouthed magnolia type who bats her eyelashes and crosses her hands and lives for nothing but her little old husband. At least I would have been blissful. I would have been typical 100% make-em. I would have lived out my little life and given you grandchildren to dote on. I would have spread out like Auntie, fanned myself on the front porch, and died happy. Why didn't you tell me the difference between justice, and right? Why didn't you?
I didn't think it necessary. Nor do I think so now.
Well, it was necessary, and you know it. God! And speaking of God, why didn't you make it very plain to me that God made the races and put the black folks in Africa with the intention of keeping them there so the missionaries could go tell them that Jesus loved them but meant for them to stay in Africa? That us bringing them over here was all a bad mistake, so they're to blame? That Jesus loved all mankind, but there are different kinds of men with separate fences around them? That Jesus meant that any man can go as far as he wants within that fence.
Jean Louise, come down to earth. He said it so easily that she stopped short. Her wave of invective had crashed over him, and still he sat there. He had declined to be angry. Somewhere within her, she felt that she was no lady, but no power on earth would prevent him from being a gentleman. Yet the piston inside drove her on. All right, I'll come down to earth. I'll land right in the living room of our house. I'll come down to you. I believed in you. I looked up to you, Atticus, like I never looked up to anybody in my life, and never will again. If you had only given me some hint, if you had only broken your word with me a couple of times, if you had been bad-tempered or impatient with me, if you had been a lesser man, maybe I could have taken what I saw you doing. If once or twice you'd have let me catch you doing something vile, then I would have understood yesterday. Then I'd have said, that's just his way. That's my old man. Because I'd have been prepared for it, somewhere along the line. Her father's face was compassionate, almost pleading. You seem to think I'm involved in something positively evil, he said. The council's our only defense, Jean Louise. Is Mr. O'Hanlon our only defense? Baby, Mr. O'Hanlon's not, I'm happy to say, typical of the Macomb County Council membership. I hope you noticed my brevity in introducing him. You were sort of short, but Atticus, that man... Mr. O'Hanlon's not prejudiced, Jean Louise. He's a sadist.
Then why did you all let him get up there?
Because he wanted to.
Sir?
Oh, yes, said her father vaguely. He goes about addressing citizens' councils all over the state. He asked permission to speak to ours, and we gave it to him. I rather think he's paid by some organization in Massachusetts. Her father swung away from her and looked out the window. I've been trying to make you see that the Macomb Council, at any rate, is simply a method of defense against...
Defense, hell! Atticus, we aren't on the Constitution now. I'm trying to make you see something. You now. You treat all people alike. I've never in my life seen you give that insolent back-of-the-hand treatment half the white people down here give Negroes, just when they're talking to them. Just when they ask him to do something. There's no get along there, nigger, in your voice when you talk to him. Yet you put out your hand in front of them as a people and say, stop here. This is as far as you can go.
I thought we agreed that... Her voice was heavy with sarcasm. We've agreed that they're backward, that they're illiterate, that they're dirty and comical and shiftless and no good. They're infants and they're stupid. Some of them. But we haven't agreed on one thing, and we never will. You deny that they're human. How so?
You deny them hope. Any man in this world, Atticus, any man who has a head and arms and legs, was born with hope in his heart. You won't find that in the Constitution. I picked that up in church somewhere.
They're simple people, most of them. But that doesn't make them subhuman. You are telling them that Jesus loves them, but not much. You are using frightful means to justify ends that you think are for the good of the most people. Your ends may well be right. I think I believe in the same ends. But you cannot use people as your pawns, Atticus. You cannot. Hitler and that crowd in Russia have done some lovely things for their lands, and they've slaughtered tens of millions of people doing them. Atticus smiled. Hitler, eh? You're no better. You're no damn better. You just try to kill their souls instead of their bodies. You just try to tell them, look, be good. Behave yourselves. If you're good and mind us, you can get a lot out of life. But if you don't mind us, we will give you nothing and take away what we've already given you. I know it's got to be slow, Atticus. I know that full well. But I know it's got to be. I wonder what would happen if the South had a Be Kind to the Niggers week. If just for 1 week the South would show them some simple, impartial courtesy. I wonder what would happen. Do you think it'd give them airs or the beginnings of self-respect? Have you ever been snubbed, Atticus? Do you know how it feels? No, don't tell me they're children and don't feel it. I was a child and felt it. So grown children must feel it, too. A real good snub, Atticus, makes you feel like you're too nasty to associate with people. How they're as good as they are now is a mystery to me, after 100 years of systematic denial that they are human. I wonder what kind of miracle we could work with a week's decency. There was no point in saying any of this, because I know you won't give an inch, and you never will. You've cheated me in a way that's inexpressible. But don't let it worry you, because the joke is entirely on me. You're the only person I think I've ever fully trusted. And now I'm done for.
I've killed you, Scout. I had to.
Don't you give me any more double talk. You're a nice, sweet old gentleman, and I'll never believe a word you say to me again. I despise you. And everything you stand for.
Well, I love you.
Don't you dare say that to me. Love me? Huh. Atticus, I'm getting out of this place fast. I don't know where I'm going, but I'm going. I never want to see another Finch or hear of one as long as I live.
As you please.
You double-dealing, ring-tailed old son of a bitch. You just sit there and say, as you please, when you've knocked me down and stomped on me and spat on me. You just sit there and say, as you please, when everything I've ever loved in this world, you just sit there and say, as you please. You love me? You son of a bitch!
That'll do, Jean Louise. That'll do. His general call to order in the days when she believed. So he kills me and gives it a twist. How can he taunt me so? How can he treat me so? God in heaven, take me away from here. God in heaven, take me away.
Part 7. 18. She never knew how she got the car started, how she held it in the road, how she got home without a serious accident.
I love you. As you please.
Had he not said that, perhaps she would have survived. If he had fought her fairly, she could have flung his words back at him, but she could not catch Mercury and hold it in her hands. She went to her room and threw her suitcase onto the bed.
I was born right where this suitcase is. Why didn't you throttle me then? Why did you let me live this long?
Jean Louise, what are you doing?
Packing, Auntie. Alexandra came to the side of the bed.
You have 10 more days with us. Is something wrong?
Auntie, leave me alone for Christ's sake. Alexandra bridled.
I'll thank you not to use that Yankee expression in this house. What's wrong?
Jean Louise went to the closet, snatched her dresses from their hangers, returned to the bed, and crammed them into her suitcase.
That's no way to pack, said Alexandra. It's my way.
She scooped up her shoes from beside the bed and threw them in after her dresses.
What is it, Jean Louise?
Auntie, you may issue a communique to the effect that I am going so far away from Macomb County, it'll take me 100 years to get back. I never want to see it or anybody in it again. And that goes for every one of you, the undertaker, the probate judge, and the chairman of the board of the Methodist Church.
You've had a fight with Atticus, haven't you?
I have. Alexandra sat on the bed and clasped her hands.
Jean Louise, I don't know what it was about, and the way you look, it must have been bad. But I do know this. No Finch runs.
She turned to her aunt.
Jesus Christ, don't you go telling me what a Finch does and what a Finch doesn't do. I'm up to here with what the Finches do, and I can't take it 1 second longer. You've been ramming that down my throat ever since I was born. Your father this, the Finch is that. My father's something unspeakable, and Uncle Jack's like Alice in Wonderland. And you are a pompous, narrow-minded old...
Jean Louise stopped, fascinated by the tears running down Alexandra's cheeks. She had never seen Alexandra cry. Alexandra looked like other people when she cried.
Auntie, please forgive me. Please say it. I hit you below the belt.
Alexandra's fingers pulled tufts of tatting from the bedspread.
That's all right. Don't you worry about it.
Jean Louise kissed her aunt's cheek.
I haven't been on track today. I guess when you're hurt, your first instinct's to hurt back.
I'm not much of a lady, Auntie, but you are.
You're mistaken, Jean Louise,
if you think you're no lady, said Alexandra. She wiped her eyes. But you are right peculiar sometimes. Jean Louise closed her suitcase.
Auntie, you go on thinking I'm a lady, just for a little while, just until 5 o'clock when Atticus comes home. Then you'll find out different.
Well, goodbye. She was carrying her suitcase to the car when she saw the town's one white taxi drive up and deposit Dr. Finch on the sidewalk.
Come to me when you can't stand it any longer. Come to me.
Well, I can't stand you any longer. I just can't take any more of your parables and dittering around. Leave me alone. You are fun and sweet and all that, but please leave me alone.
From the corner of her eye, she watched her uncle tacking peacefully up the driveway. He takes such long steps for a short man, she thought. That is one of the things I will remember about him. She turned and put a key in the lock of the trunk, the wrong key, and she tried another one. It worked, and she raised the lid.
Going somewhere?
Yes, sir.
Where? I'm going to get in this car and drive it to Macomb Junction. And sit there until the first train comes along and get on it. Tell Atticus if he wants his car back, he can send after it.
Stop feeling sorry for yourself and listen to me.
Uncle Jack, I am so sick and damn tired of listening to the lot of you. I could yell bloody murder. Won't you leave me alone? Can't you get off my back for 1 minute?
She slammed down the trunk lid, snatched out the key, and straightened up to catch Dr. Finch's savage backhand swipe full on the mouth. Her head jerked to the left and met his hand coming viciously back. She stumbled and groped for the car to balance herself. She saw her uncle's face shimmering among the tiny dancing lights.
I am trying, said Dr. Finch, to attract your attention.
She pressed her fingers to her eyes, her temples, to the sides of her head. She struggled to keep from fainting, to keep from vomiting, to keep her head from spinning. She felt blood spring to her teeth, and she spat blindly on the ground. Gradually, the gong-like reverberations in her head subsided, and her ears stopped ringing.
Open your eyes, Jean Louise.
She blinked several times, and her uncle snapped into focus. His walking stick nestled in his left elbow. His vest was immaculate. There was a scarlet rosebud in his lapel. He was holding out his handkerchief to her. She took it and wiped her mouth. She was exhausted. All passion spent? She nodded.
I can't fight them anymore, she said.
Dr. Finch took her by the arm.
But you can't join them either, can you?
He muttered. She felt her mouth swelling, and she moved her lips with difficulty.
You nearly knocked me cold. I'm so tired.
Silently, he walked her to the house, down the hall, and into the bathroom. He sat her on the edge of the tub, went to the medicine cabinet, and opened it. He put on his glasses, tilted his head back, and took a bottle from the top shelf. He plucked a wad of cotton from a package and turned to her.
Hold up your mug, he said.
He filled the cotton with liquid, turned back to her upper lip, made a hideous face, and dabbed at her cuts.
This'll keep you from giving yourself something. Xandra!
He shouted. Alexandra appeared from the kitchen.
What is it, Jack? Jean Louise, I thought you...
Never mind that. Is there any missionary vanilla in this house?
Jack, don't be silly.
Come on now. I know you keep it for fruitcakes. Gracious God, sister, get me some whiskey.
Go in the living room, Jean Louise. She walked in her daze to the living room and sat down. Her uncle came in carrying, in one hand, a tumbler 3 fingers full of whiskey, and in the other, a glass of water.
If you drink all this at once, I'll give you a dime, he said.
Jean Louise drank and choked.
Hold your breath, stupid.
Now chase it. She grabbed for the water and drank rapidly. She kept her eyes closed and let the warm alcohol creep through her. When she opened them, she saw her uncle sitting on the sofa, contemplating her placidly. Presently, he said,
How do you feel?
Hot.
That's the liquor. Tell me, what's in your head now?
She said weakly,
A blank, my lord. Fractious girl. Don't you quote at me. Tell me. How do you feel?
She frowned, squeezed her eyelids together, and touched her tender mouth with her tongue.
Different, somehow.
I'm sitting right here, and it's just like I'm sitting in my apartment in New York. I don't know. I feel funny. Dr. Finch rose and thrust his hands into his pockets, drew them out, and cradled his arms behind his back.
Well, now, I think I'll just go and have myself a drink on that. I never struck a woman before in my life. Think I'll go strike your aunt. See what happens. You just sit there for a while and be quiet.
Jean Louise sat there and giggled when she heard her uncle fussing at his sister in the kitchen.
Of course I'm gonna have a drink, Xandra. I deserve one. I don't go about hitting women every day. And I tell you, if you're not used to it, it takes it out of you. Oh, she's all right. I fail to detect the difference between drinking it and eating it. We're all of us going to hell. It's just a question of time. Don't be such an old pot, sister. I'm not lying on the floor yet. Why don't you have one?
She felt the time had stopped, and she was inside a not unpleasant vacuum. There was no land around, and no beings, but there was an aura of vague friendliness in this indifferent place. I'm getting high, she thought. Her uncle bounced back into the living room, sipping from a tall glass filled with ice, water, and whiskey.
Look what I got out of Xandra. I played hell with her fruitcakes.
Jean Louise attempted to pin him down. Uncle Jack, she said, I have a definite idea that you know what happened this afternoon.
I do. I know every word you said to Atticus. And I almost heard you from my house when you lit into Henry.
The old bastard. He followed me to town.
You eavesdropped? Of all the...
Of course not. Do you think you can discuss it now?
Discuss it? Yes, I think so. That is, if you'll talk straight to me. I don't think I can take Bishop Colenso now. Dr. Finch arranged himself neatly on the sofa and leaned in toward her. He said,
I will talk straight to you, my darling. Do you know why? Because I can now.
Because you can?
Yes. Look back, Jean Louise. Look back to yesterday. To the coffee this morning. To this afternoon.
What do you know about this morning?
Have you never heard of the telephone? Xandra was glad to answer a few judicious questions.
You telegraph your pitches all over the place, Jean Louise.
This afternoon, I tried to give you some help, in a roundabout way, to make it easier for you, to give you some insight, to soften it a little.
To soften what, Uncle Jack?
To soften your coming into this world.
When Dr. Finch pulled at his drink, Jean Louise saw his sharp brown eyes flash above the glass. That's what you tend to forget about him, she thought. He's so busy fidgeting, you don't notice how closely he's watching you. He's crazy, all right, like every fox that was ever born. And he knows so much more than foxes. Gracious, I'm drunk.
Look back now, her uncle was saying. It's still there, isn't it?
She looked. It was there, all right. Every word of it. But something was different. She sat in silence, remembering.
Uncle Jack, she finally said,
everything's still there. It happened.
It was.
But you know, it's bearable somehow. It's bearable.
She was speaking the truth. She had not made the journey through time that makes all things bearable. Today was today, and she looked at her uncle in wonder.
Thank God, said Dr. Finch quietly. Do you know why it's bearable now, my darling?
No, sir.
I'm content with things as they are. I don't want to question. I just want to stay this way.
She was conscious of her uncle's eyes upon her, and she moved her head to one side. She was far from trusting him. If he starts on Mackworth Parade and tells me I'm just like him, I'll be at Makeham Junction before sundown.
You'd eventually figure this out for yourself, she heard him say. But let me speed it up for you. You've had a busy day.
It's bearable, Jean Louise, because you are your own person now.
Not Mackworth Parade's. Mine.
She looked up at her uncle. Dr. Finch stretched out his legs.
It's rather complicated, he said, and I don't want you to fall into the tiresome error of being conceited about your complexes. You'd bore us for the rest of our lives with that, so we'll keep away from it.
Every man's island, Jean Louise, every man's watchman is his conscience. There is no such thing as a collective conscience.
This was news, coming from him. But let him talk. He would find his way to the 19th century somehow.
Now you, miss, born with your own conscience, somewhere along the line fastened it like a barnacle onto your father's. As you grew up, when you were grown, totally unknown to yourself, you confused your father with God. You never saw him as a man, with a man's heart, and a man's failings. I'll grant you it may have been hard to see. He makes so few mistakes. But he makes them like all of us. You were an emotional cripple, leaning on him, getting the answers from him, assuming that your answers would always be his answers.
She listened to the figure on the sofa.
When you happened along and saw him doing something that seemed to you to be the very antithesis of his conscience, your conscience, you literally could not stand it. It made you physically ill. Life became hell on earth for you. You had to kill yourself, or he had to kill you, to get you functioning as a separate entity.
Kill myself? Kill him? I had to kill him to live?
You talk like you've known this a long time.
I have. So's your father. We wondered sometimes when your conscience and his would part company.
And over what?
Dr. Finch smiled.
Well, we know now. I'm just thankful I was around when the ruction started. Atticus couldn't talk to you the way I'm talking. Why not, sir? You wouldn't have listened to him. You couldn't have listened. Our gods are remote from us, Jean Louise. They must never descend to human level.
Is that why he didn't lay him into me? Is that why he didn't even try to defend himself?
He was letting you break your icons, one by one. He was letting you reduce him to the status of a human being. I love you, as you please.
Where she would have had a spirited argument only, an exchange of ideas, a clash of hard and different points of view with a friend, with him, she had tried to destroy. She had tried to tear him to pieces, to wreck him, to obliterate him. Child Roland to the Dark Tower came.
Do you understand me, Jean Louis?
Yes, Uncle Jack, I understand you.
Dr. Finch crossed his legs and jammed his hands into his pockets. When you stopped running, Jean Louise, and turned around, that turn took fantastic courage.
Sir?
Oh, not the kind of courage that makes a soldier go across no man's land. That's the kind that he summons up because he has to. This kind is, well, it's part of one's will to live. Part of one's instinct for self-preservation. Sometimes we have to kill a little so we can live.
When we don't, when women don't, they cry themselves to sleep and have their mothers wash out their hose every day.
What do you mean? When I stopped running?
Dr. Finch chuckled.
You know, he said, you're very much like your father. I tried to point that out to you today. I regret to say I used tactics the late George Washington Hill would envy. You're very much like him. Except you're a bigot. And he's not.
I beg your pardon?
Dr. Finch bit his underlip and let it go.
Mm-hmm. A bigot. Not a big one. Just an ordinary turnip-sized bigot.
Jean Louise rose and went to the bookshelves. She pulled down a dictionary and leafed through it.
Bigot.
She read. Noun. One obstinately or intolerably devoted to his own church, party, belief, or opinion. Explain yourself, sir.
I was just trying to answer your run-in question. Let me elaborate a little on that definition. What does a bigot do when he meets someone who challenges his opinions?
He doesn't give. He stays rigid. Doesn't even try to listen. Just lashes out.
Now you were turned inside out by the granddaddy of all father things. So you ran. And how you ran. You've no doubt heard some pretty offensive talk since you've been home, but instead of getting on your charger and blindly striking it down, you turned and ran. You said in effect, I don't like the way these people do, so I have no time for them.
You better take time for them, honey. Otherwise, you'll never grow. You'll be the same at 60 as you are now. Then you'll be a case, not my niece.
You have a tendency not to give anybody elbow room in your mind for their ideas, no matter how silly you think they are.
Dr. Finch clasped his hands and rested them on the back of his head.
Good grief, baby. People don't agree with the Klan, but they certainly don't try to prevent them from putting on sheets and making fools of themselves in public.
Why did you let Mr. O'Hanlon get up there?
Because he wanted to.
Oh, God, what have I done?
But they beat people, Uncle Jack.
Now, that's another thing, and it's just one more thing you failed to take into consideration about your father.
You've been extravagant with your talk of despots, Hitlers, and ring-tailed sons of bitches. By the way, where did you get that? Reminds me of a cold winter's night, possum hunting.
Jean Louise winced.
He told you all that?
Oh, yes. But don't start worrying about what you called him. He's got a lawyer's hide. He's been called worse in his day.
Not by his daughter, though.
Well, as I was saying,
for the first time in her memory, her uncle was bringing her back to the point. For the second time in her memory, her uncle was out of character. The first time was when he sat mutely in their old living room, listening to the soft murmurs. "The Lord never sends you more than you can bear." And he said, "My shoulders ache. Is there any whiskey in this house?" This is a day of miracles, she thought.
The Klan can parade around all it wants, but when it starts bombing and beating people, don't you know who'd be the first to try and stop it?
Yes, sir.
The law is what he lives by. He'll do his best to prevent someone from beating up somebody else. Then he'll turn around and try to stop no less than the federal government.
Just like you, child.
You turn and tackle no less than your own 10 God. But remember this, he'll always do it by the letter and by the spirit of the law. That's the way he lives.
Uncle Jack.
Now don't start feeling guilty, Jean Louise. You've done nothing wrong this day. And don't, for the sake of John Henry Newman, start worrying over what a bigot you are. I told you you were only a turnip-sized one. But Uncle Jack, remember this also. It's always easy to look back and see what we were. Yesterday, 10 years ago. It's hard to see what we are. If you can master that trick, you'll get along.
Uncle Jack, I thought I'd gone through all that being disillusioned about your parents' stuff when I took my bachelor's degree. But there's something.
Her uncle began fidgeting with his coat pockets. He found what he was seeking, pulled one from the package, and said, "Have you a match?" Jean Louise was mesmerized.
"I said, do you have a match? Have you gone nuts? You beat the hell out of me when you caught me at it, you old bastard!"
He had, unceremoniously, one Christmas, when he found her under the house with stolen cigarettes.
"This should prove to you there's no justice in this world. I smoke sometimes now. It's my one concession to old age. I find myself becoming anxious sometimes. It gives me something to do with my hands."
Jean Louise found a match flip on the table by her chair. She struck one and held it to her uncle's cigarette. Something to do with his hands, she thought. She wondered how many times his hands and rubber gloves, impersonal and omnipotent, had set some child on its feet. "He's crazy, all right." Dr. Finch held his cigarette with his thumb and two fingers. He looked at it pensively.
"You're colorblind, Jean Louise," he said. "You always have been. You always will be. The only differences you see between one human and another are differences in looks and intelligence and character and the like. You've never been prodded to look at people as a race. And now that race is the burning issue of the day, you're still unable to think racially. You see only people."
"But, Uncle Jack, I don't especially want to run out and marry a Negro or something.
You know, I practiced medicine for nearly 20 years, and I'm afraid I regard human beings mostly on a basis of relative suffering. But I'll risk a small pronouncement. There's nothing under the sun that says because you go to school with one Negro, or go to school with them in droves, you'll want to marry one. That's one of the tom-toms the white supremacists beat. How many mixed marriages have you seen in New York?"
"Come to think of it, darn few. Relatively, that is."
"There's your answer. The white supremacists are really pretty smart. If they can't scare us with the essential inferiority line, they'll wrap it in a miasma of sex, because that's the one thing they know is feared in our fundamentalist hearts down here. They try to strike terror in Southern mothers, lest their children grow up to fall in love with Negroes. If they didn't make an issue of it, the issue would rarely arise. If the issue arose, it would be met on private ground. The NAACP has a great deal to answer for in that department, too. But the white supremacists fear reason, because they know cold reason beats them. Prejudice, a dirty word, and faith, a clean one, have something in common. They both begin where reason ends. That's odd, isn't it? It's one of the oddities of this world."
Dr. Finch got up from the sofa and extinguished his cigarette in an ashtray on the table beside her.
Now, young lady, take me home. It's nearly 5. That's almost time for you to fetch your father.
Jean Louise surfaced.
Get Atticus? I'll never be able to look him in the eye again.
Listen, girl. You've got to shake off a 20-year-old habit, and shake it off fast. You will begin now. Do you think Atticus is going to hurl a thunderbolt at you?
After what I said to him? After the...
Dr. Finch jabbed the floor with his walking stick.
Jean Louise, have you ever met your father?
No, she had not. She was terrified.
I think you'll have a surprise coming, said her uncle.
Uncle Jack, I can't.
Don't you tell me you can't, girl. Say that again and I'll take this stick to you. I mean that.
They walked to the car.
Jean Louise, have you ever thought about coming home?
Home?
If you will refrain from echoing either the last clause or the last word of everything I say to you, I will be much obliged.
Home.
Yes, home.
Jean Louise grinned. He was becoming Uncle Jack again.
No, sir, she said.
Well, at the risk of overloading you, could you possibly give an undertaking to think about it?
You may not know it, but there's room for you down here.
You mean Atticus needs me?
Not altogether. I was thinking of Makem.
That'd be great, with me on one side and everybody else on the other. If life's an endless flow of the kind of talk I heard this morning, I don't think I'd exactly fit in.
That's the one thing about here in the South you've missed. You'd be amazed if you knew how many people are on your side, if side's the right word. You're no special case. The woods are full of people like you, but we need some more of you.
She started the car and backed it down the driveway. She said,
"What on earth could I do? I can't fight them. There's no fighting me anymore."
I don't mean by fighting. I mean by going to work every morning, coming home at night, seeing your friends.
Uncle Jack, I can't live in a place that I don't agree with and that doesn't agree with me.
Dr. Finch said,
Melbourne said, if you tell me what Melbourne said, I'll stop this car and put you out right here. I know how you hate to walk. After your stroll to church and back and pushing that cat around the yard, you've had it. I'll put you right out, and don't you think I won't.
Dr. Finch sighed.
You're mighty belligerent toward a feeble old man, but if you wish to continue in darkness, that is your privilege.
Feeble hell! You're about as feeble as a crocodile.
Jean Louise touched her mouth.
Very well, if you won't let me tell you what Melbourne said, I'll put it in my own words. The time your friends need you is when they're wrong, Jean Louise. They don't need you when they're right.
What do you mean?
I mean it takes a certain kind of maturity to live in the South these days. You don't have it yet, but you have a shadow of the beginnings of it. You haven't the humbleness of mine.
I thought fear of the Lord was the beginning of wisdom.
It's the same thing. Humility.
They had come to his house. She stopped the car.
Uncle Jack, she said, what am I going to do about Hank?
What you will eventually, he said.
Let him down easy?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
He's not your kind. Love whom you will. Marry your own kind.
Look, I'm not going to argue with you over the relative merits of trash.
That has nothing to do with it. I'm tired of you. I want my supper.
Dr. Finch put his hand out and pinched her chin.
Good afternoon, miss, he said.
Why did you take so much trouble with me today? I know how you hate to move out of that house.
Because you're my child. You and Jim were the children I never had. You two gave me something long ago, and I'm trying to pay my debts. You two help me,
How, sir?
Dr. Finch's eyebrows went up.
Didn't you know?
Hasn't Atticus gotten around to telling you that?
Well, I'm amazed at Xander not...
Good heavens,
I thought all of Makem knew that.
Knew what?
I was in love with your mother.
My mother?
Oh, yes.
when Atticus married her, and I'd come home from Nashville for Christmas and things like that, why, I fell head over heels in love with her. I still am. Didn't you know that? Jean Louise put her head on the steering wheel. Uncle Jack, I'm so ashamed of myself. I don't know what to do. Me yelling around like, oh, I could kill myself.
I shouldn't do that. There's been enough focal suicide for one day.
All that time you...
Well, sure, honey.
Did Atticus know it?
Certainly.
Uncle Jack, I feel one inch high.
Well, I didn't mean to do that. You're not by yourself, Jean Louise. You're no special case. Now go get your father.
You can say all this? Just like that?
Mm-hmm. Just like that. As I said, you and Jim were very special to me. You were my dream children. But as Kipling said, that's another story. Call on me tomorrow, and you'll find me a grave man.
He was the only person she ever knew who could paraphrase three authors into one sentence and have them all make sense.
Thanks, Uncle Jack.
Thank you, Scout.
Dr. Finch got out of the car and shut the door. He poked his head inside the window, elevated his eyebrows, and said in a decorous voice,
I was once an exceedingly odd young lady, suffering much from spleen and vapors.
Jean Louise was halfway to town when she remembered. She stepped on the brake, leaned out the window, and called to the spare figure in the distance.
But we only cut respectable capers, don't we, Uncle Jack?
19. She walked into the foyer of the office. She saw Henry still at his desk. She went to him.
Hank?
Hello, he said.
7:30 tonight, she said.
Yes. As they made a date for their leave-taking, a tide was running, returning, and she ran to meet it. He was a part of her, as timeless as Finch's Landing, as the Conninghams and Old Sarum. Macomb and Macomb County had taught him things she had never known, could never learn, and Macomb had rendered her useless to him as anything other than his oldest friend.
That you, Jean Louise?
Her father's voice frightened her.
Yes, sir.
Atticus walked from his office to the foyer and took down his hat and stick from the hat rack.
Ready?
He said.
Ready? You can say ready to me?
What are you that I tried to obliterate and grind into the earth, and you say ready?
I can't beat you.
I can't join you.
Don't you know that?
She went to him.
Atticus, she said,
You may be sorry, but I'm proud of you.
She looked up and saw her father beaming at her.
What?
I said, I'm proud of you.
I don't understand you. I don't understand men at all, and I never will.
Well, I certainly hoped a daughter of mine would hold her ground for what she thinks is right. Stand up to me, first of all.
Jean Louise rubbed her nose.
I called you some pretty grim things, she said.
Atticus said,
I can take anything anybody calls me, so long as it's not true.
You don't even know how to cuss, Jean Louise.
By the way, where did you pick up the ring-tailed variety?
Right here in Macomb.
Dear goodness, the things you learned.
Dear goodness, the things I learned.
I did not want my world disturbed, but I wanted to crush the man who's trying to preserve it for me. I wanted to stamp out all the people like him. I guess it's like an airplane. They're the drag and we're the thrust. Together we make the thing fly. Too much of us and we're nose-heavy. Too much of them and we're tail-heavy. It's a matter of balance. I can't beat him. And I can't join him.
Atticus?
Ma'am?
I think I love you very much.
She saw her old enemy's shoulders relax, and she watched him push his hat to the back of his head.
Let's go home, Scout. It's been a long day. Open the door for me.
She stepped aside to let him pass. She followed him to the car and watched him get laboriously into the front seat. As she welcomed him silently to the human race, the stab of discovery made her tremble a little. Somebody walked over my grave, she thought. Probably Jim, on some idiotic errand. She went around the car, and as she slipped under the steering wheel, this time she was careful not to bump her head.
This is Reese Witherspoon. We hope you've enjoyed this production of Go Set a Watchman, a novel by Harper Lee. This program was produced and directed by Scott Sherritt, executive producer Caitlin Gehring, recorded at the Village Studios in Los Angeles by Jared Nugent. The song Mockingbird Waltz was written by Rodney Crowell, performed by Rodney Crowell, Russ Barenberg, Tim Lauer, and Tanya Hancheroff. Recorded and mixed by Dan Nobler. Post-production by Danny Meltzer. Text copyright 2015 by Harper Lee. Production copyright 2015 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.